Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Listen to them. Children of the night. What music, Dave.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
You wouldn't be able to do these awful things to me if I weren't still in this chair.
But you are, Blanche. You are in that chair.
Who's in the box?
Put the gun down, baby.
No, what's in the box?
Wolves have a territorial range of about 300 miles, and a kill range of 30. If we're close to their den, and if we're within that radius, then they'll come after us. How can we tell if we're close? We can't.
What in God's name are you talking about?
Your son, Mr. Thorne. The son of the devil.
They're insane.
He must die, Mr. Thorne!
Do not want to go that way.
What's that way?
Officer, sir, you do not want to go that way. We're going to the mall.
Hello, Dexter Morgan.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I'm one of your co-hosts, Phil, from the state of New Hampshire in the U.S. of A., and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how's it going, sir?
It's going well.
Excellent. And in the state of New York?
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how are you?
I'm fine, Phil. How are you?
Doing all right. And we have a Connecticut American?
This is Chrissy.
Chrissy, how are you?
I am doing well, thank you.
Excellent, excellent. So today, for folks who are curious, we're recording this on March 26, 2020. That doesn't necessarily mean it'll be released in a few days, but for folks who are curious when we record our episodes, that has been requested. For folks who are new to the podcast, we are darkdiscussions.com is the website. We have an email, darkdiscussions@aol.com, where you can email us anything and everything related to genre films, video games, and all that stuff. So if you have a review or ideas or want to read off something to us, we'll take a look and read it on our episodes. And then we have a Facebook group called Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group, where we have discussions going on about various things, including the passing of Stuart Gordon, the coronavirus and how that's affecting movies and movie theaters, and various other things such as Ozark season 3, and on and on. So a lot of good stuff there. Just come and join us there. Eric, what else can people find on darkdiscussions.com?
Well, Phil, they can find a whole bunch of things. On the front page, on the right-hand side, you can find links to Friends of the Podcast, so you can check all those out. At the top of the page, you'll find links to different sections of the site. There's an article section where you'll find articles written by myself as well as others. There's also an audio section where you can find every episode of Dark Discussions, as well as any episode of any of our spinoff podcasts, available to download for free. There's bound to be something you're interested in there, so go check out that. And then on the front page, front and center, is a link to our Patreon account. Patreon is a service that lets you financially support your online artists. Producing this podcast is not free. If you'd like to help us offset the cost of producing this podcast, you can follow the link on the front page or go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions. For every $5 a month that you care to for every $5 a month that you care to donate, you'll have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly cover on the show. We take all these submissions from our patrons, and we draw them randomly on a quarterly basis to pick a topic chosen by one of our patrons. So, for more information, you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions or follow the link on the front page of darkdiscussions.com.
I'll probably add a Homer Simpson right at that point.
That would be fantastic. And Eric, I would like to say this one thing. I so enjoyed your little video on Facebook talking about the $20 rentals.
Oh,
that was pretty great. I was like, yeah, word. I'm kind of not happy either with that. So anyway.
But people are doing it.
I know, and it's upsetting me.
Well, why?
But for folks who don't know what Mike and Eric and Chrissy are talking about, I think you're talking about new films being dropped directly to VOD because obviously the movie theaters are closed at this time and they're charging $20 rental fees. Is that right?
On some movies, ones that were already in theaters.
Or planning to. Like, I assume Trolls, when that comes out on April 11th, that'll probably be a $20 rental, too.
I have no idea what they're doing with that one. The ones that I know that they were doing that with were three Universal movies that had already been released in theaters and were way, way premature for their normal home video release. The people I know who've paid the $20 were people who watched it in groups, which is kind of probably, with families.
Irrelevant.
What about Onward? Has that been placed up? That's not a
Onward is for sale. Onward is Disney.
Right. That's what I said. It's not a Universal.
That was just announced today. So it's available now to buy for $20. But I think next week it's coming to Disney Plus. Okay. So for those people who are subscribing to Disney Plus, you do get to watch it for free next week.
Okay. So it's just Universal that seems a little, I guess, as Eric would say, kind of upsetting to bother us.
And Mike said he didn't understand why it's upsetting me, and I'll explain why it's upsetting me is because I don't want studios to think that $19.99 is an acceptable rental price, because it is not. $19.99 is a purchase price, period. It does not matter how many people are watching the movie. It does not matter when the movie was set to release. Situation.
Absolutely does. They're trying to make the money back that they invest in the films. They invest more money in films that go to release in theaters than they do invest in films that are going to go straight to video. This is an exceptional circumstance. They kind of got screwed because
of gouging people during a crisis.
What?
I said they're gouging people during a crisis.
They're not gouging people. There's plenty of other alternatives. But people who did want to see it early, they're trying to recoup the money that they already might be losing on these films. Now, I think with the case of Invisible Man, given its budget and given the fact that it had already been in theaters for several weeks and more than made its money back, that might have been gouging. The Hunt, not so much. But again, nobody's forcing you. This isn't a case of buying up all the toilet paper in the area and forcing you to pay for it.
Well, Mike is...
You can just not watch it.
You are correct, Mike. The Hunt and the Invisible Man and probably even that basketball movie all were fairly cheaply made compared to the blockbusters. So I see Eric's point. I think I'm with Eric on this.
But again, nobody's forcing you to buy it. They make $30.
And that's why it's upsetting me that other people are doing that, because that's going to make them think that this experiment is a success.
Well, we don't know how many have done it.
Right. My vision of the whole thing could be skewed because I tend to hang out on horror social media groups where a bunch of people like the movies that are doing this right now, like The Invisible Man and The Hunt. Those are two movies that people that hang out in the groups that I hang out in are interested in watching. So maybe I have a skewed perspective because of the things that I look at.
Because they didn't get a chance to go see it in theaters.
Sure they did. They just didn't take the chance.
Well,
I saw both of those movies in theaters.
They didn't get much of a chance to see it in theaters, and so did I.
Either way, I'm going to do what I usually do and rent
chicken
films
out and not
for,
have an opinion.
rent films for $5.99 or whatever, similar to the movie we're going to talk about tonight, or VFW or Dark Encounter or any other film that we've rented this year. Those films are cheaper, so I'm not going to spend $20 for a film
I'll pay $19.99 to own a movie. I would pay up to $10 to rent a movie, but I'm not going to pay $20.
And no one is denying you that opportunity.
And
you just have to wait to
I don't want enough people to do this so that it becomes the norm. That is my fear, is that $19.99 rentals will become the norm. That would upset me greatly. So
I think I'm with you, Eric, on this one, yeah.
But there's no evidence that's going to be the case. It's, again, extraordinary circumstances.
There's no interest. There's no evidence an asteroid's going to hit the Earth either, but I can worry about that, too, if I want to.
Oh, no, there's plenty of evidence that an asteroid's going to hit the Earth. Starting with the fact that they do and they have.
Fair enough.
I think I'm with Eric on this one.
Well, because you're cheap.
No, it's
well,
it's,
hang on now. I take offense to that comment, Mike, because you're the one that we always have to fucking wait till a year and a half after the year end for you to catch up on the year's releases, because you won't go fucking see anything during the year it's released. You gotta wait till it's available for rental.
No, I see a lot during their year it's released. I see a lot in theaters.
Okay.
The other one I was complaining about Unsane, since it was built up. Filmed on a
not complain. No. I didn't complain about it. I brought up. I did not complain about it, Phil. I did not complain about it. I forwarded those complaints. Mentioned other people brought it up and introduced the concept of variable pricing of of films that are cheaper to make, having cheaper admission prices. That was the argument I was making, and that some people have introduced that and said, "Hey, maybe that's the way to get people into theaters."
Anyway, we've gone way off track here.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just wanted to compliment Eric, and it kind of went crazy. But anyway, it was just...
It's a good compliment to Eric. I'm with you.
Thanks. Yeah. Everybody likes me some...
Listen, you're a little tinny tonight.
Oh, hold on. That's because I pulled my stupid mic away from my mouth because I'm a dumbass. All right, I'm back.
You don't sound like Abe. You sound normal. Abe is the one that's always tinny. All right. So, very well. So I think we can get into, you know what? All that started because I said we should put Homer with the donut comment. And then somehow the flow of consciousness came up with all this other stuff. I don't know. Anyway, I think we can talk about our topic tonight, Eric. So, Eric, why don't you let everybody know what we're going to discuss tonight?
All right. Tonight we're going to be discussing a new release called After Midnight.
Listen, baby, you're going to talk to me sooner or later. You can't just disappear. Ever since you left, some kind of thing has been coming out of the woods every night.
I'm going crazy without her. I'm going around town telling people there's a big bad wolf trying to blow our house down.
Maybe she got tired of waiting around.
You just tell your sister. She y'all just come on home.
Yeah, kitty. And I don't
hate to say. You see what it did to my door?
How do you know, though?
Cause I saw it.
There ain't one town don't have someone saying they seen something they can't explain.
You're right about most things, but you're wrong about one thing. You are enough for me, Abby.
Hell, I'm not entirely convinced it's not you. You like a werewolf or something?
That's right. After Midnight is a 2019 film, technically, because it played festivals and all that. But it is
fuck festivals; they don't count.
That's right. But it was released everywhere in 2020. So we're considering this a 2020 film. The film is directed by Jeremy Gardner and Christian Stella. Jeremy Gardner is actually from where Chrissy lives in the Connecticut area. He actually was in the movie Bliss and has little roles in acting all over the place. But most folks may remember him for the movie The Battery, which he wrote and co-starred in and directed too. And then Christian Stellar is a guy that just happens to work with Jeremy a lot. So he was probably co-directing because directing while starring in a film is kind of a pain in the ass. And so Jeremy, who happens to be one of the co-stars of this film, had a co-director. He did write the film. The other main actress here is Bree Grant, probably best known for the Speed Girl from the television show The Host from a few years ago, otherwise mostly independent and things of that nature. The film is getting pretty good reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, I think around 80% with 22 reviews. Most of the reviews aren't from major newspapers or whatnot, but a handful are. So it's gotten some notice from the mainstream. So I think we can get into how we heard about this film and what we thought about it. So I think we can start with you, Mike.
Just one of these things that's been popping up online. I think I had already seen it in hindsight a few months ago, because it was something that was coming from the guys who made The Battery, which I was a huge fan of. And so that was that. I watched it with my wife last Friday, after we knew it was the next thing we did. So I've been sitting on it for about a week. My wife liked it. I liked it. I think I preferred The Battery more. My wife said it could have been a few minutes shorter, and I might be able to agree with that. I think it has a thing where, if you know, pay attention to the dialogue. It's not so much dialogue as it is alternating speeches, which for me worked a little better in The Battery, because in The Battery, you are just dealing with two people who are, as far as they know, the last people left on Earth. And here you do have more of a mix. And so when you have like a dinner table and everyone is taking a turn giving their little speech, it's a little weird. But those are relatively minor complaints. As a independent film on a low budget, I think it was pretty decent. It's a nice little monster movie. I do like the creature that is in the film. Seemed to be a relatively unique design, although I haven't really had a chance to study it. A lot of it just has to do with the way they colored it to make it very striking. And it did have one just moment that did, I think, made me jump. I don't know if it literally made me jump, but it did give me a start in the film, and I'm sure we'll get to that.
All right, very good. Chrissy.
Well, this had been on my list of movies I was looking forward to seeing this year. So I was kind of excited when we said we were going to do it. And mostly the reason I was really excited about it was because of the storyline. Just the way the logline read, it sounded appealing to me. I enjoyed this movie very much. I did not see The Battery. The only other movie I have seen by these people is Spring, which I really, really enjoyed and liked very much. I would agree with Mike's assessment that it's not dialogue. It's like alternating speeches. I did like the sense of isolation in this film. I thought that the characters stood out. These people were really interesting. The few that are in there on a consistent basis were kind of interesting, even though they were just like sketches. I liked the creature. I liked that it was written well enough that you weren't actually sure if this guy was really crazy or not. They did leave some room for doubt. I do think that this is a giant metaphor for what happens when, someone you love leaves you. And I will talk more about that. Overall, I think it was a pretty good movie, but honestly, I'm going to say that this is definitely not for everyone. I think it really, I'm going to almost call this a chick horror film, because it really is focused on relationships and emotional content. And so the pacing is kind of indicative of that. And it's not really high action. It's not a lot of, scary stuff. It's not jump scares. There's only a couple. So I really kind of see this more as a quiet, emotional little indie horror film. And I really love the setting they chose. I think there is a lot to like about this film. But anyway, that's my assessment. I was surprised. Because when I watched this, it was nothing like from the log line what I had imagined. So.
All right. Very good. A couple of things, Chrissy, that's a good point about Spring. Resolution and a few other films those guys did, including The Endless. Justin Benson was the producer. He's the director of one of the co-directors of all those films, Spring and whatnot. And he actually produced this film and also starred as the police officer / brother-in-law of the main character. So that was a good point that you brought those guys up, because they're in here too. Justin Benson is the guy that does most of the, I think, directing, while the other guy does most of the cinematography for their films when they do their co-directing. And Mike, you mentioned the length of the film, which is kind of interesting, because it actually is only about an hour and 17 minutes without the credits. So just for folks who are curious. Now, yeah, for me, yeah, I was looking forward to this film too. This was one of those films that popped up as a film to look for, and obviously with anything tied with Justin Benson usually gets some notice because he's kind of a independent film darling in a sense. This film here was getting decent reviews and popped up a couple times for us to do. So we were looking through three or four films last week, and this is the film that we chose. I wasn't a big fan of this film. Because it's really like, I think we're going to probably talk about a magical realism in a sense, metaphors, all that other stuff, like you said, Chrissy. So it wasn't the horror film that I was expecting. The acting is great. The writing actually is great. The cinematography, the directing, everything is really good. It's just that the film itself did not work for me. I actually didn't like this film much at all. I actually have a lot of hatred for the film, but I'm not going to bust other people on it because it's still getting decent reviews, and I'm sure folks who like this subgenre of genre cinema will probably like it. But as Chrissy said, it's definitely not for everybody because it's not a real horror film in the sense that horror we would expect. I personally wouldn't recommend it. Eric?
I'm probably going to fall somewhere in between Phil and Mike. I thought this is a good movie. I agree with everything Phil just said. It was well made. The acting is actually quite good. But it was a little weird. There really wasn't enough monster in it for it to be an effective monster movie. And the fact that there was a monster in it made for a weird romantic drama. So it kind of, for me, couldn't decide on what it actually wanted to be, and that was my issue with this movie. But I thought everybody in it was great. I also enjoyed the creature design. I just wish there had been a little more of it in the movie. Because I mean, they've got. I'm looking at the artwork on IMDb right now. They've got it on the cover of the movie.
That sucks.
Yeah, they really don't show it to you that much in the movie, which is kind of a bummer. But other than the kind of weird mix between drama and horror, I thought it was a really well done movie.
All right.
You know what, Eric, I would agree with you. That's the perfect description. A weird romantic drama. Mm-hmm. That really is perfect, I think. Yep.
Well, and Phil, yeah. when we were talking offline about the movie, he said he felt like he was tricked into watching this movie, thinking it was a horror movie when it was really not. And I get where he's coming from there, because they really kind of in the marketing for the movie lean on the horror more than it's actually in the movie. So I understand why he felt a little bit tricked in that regard.
Yeah, and also I will say
wait. So he watched the trailer?
No. But the cover,
the description.
The description. Yeah, that type of stuff. I didn't see the trailer. No.
I will say that there was a. Before we get into spoiler turf, I'm not going to totally reveal it, but there's one shot of the creature that comes up in the middle, you guys, and I think you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And I actually wanted to kind of see it, so I stopped the movie at that.
So did I.
and dude, you can see the actor's leg. I'm emailing this to you on your Facebook Messenger right now because it's a riot. Look, you can totally see their leg, and that because it was a quick shot, so obviously they didn't spend the money on the entire costume for that one quick shot. Mm-hmm. And
This is the one in the middle of the film.
Yeah, I just got such a charge out of it. I was like, ooh, I'm going to screen that, shot that, and send it to the guy. So I just sent it to you. And if you look on the left of the picture, you can see, like, the person's leg. Yeah.
I also paused it and looked at it while I was watching the movie.
Too funny. Yeah, for folks who are interested, the movie at this time is pretty much available VOD wherever. General pricing, you know, $3.99 to $5.99, not the $19.99 that we were discussing prior to the playing of the trailer, because it was a direct to VOD film. Oh yeah, look at that, the leg. That's too funny.
Yeah, but I don't know. Given the color of the creature, I don't know if that's intentional or not.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah,
I mean, see it. You can also see the hand of the creature too, which is very much a human hand.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Again, it doesn't matter. And again, it's only for a flash. You know, right. like a gunshot flash.
I mean, that shot is in the light of a shotgun blast. That's the amount of time that's on screen.
Indeed. Yeah.
Well, it just reminded me there was I somehow ended up in a discussion of the movie Battle Beyond the Stars, which was a 1980.
I just pulled that out of my box Pass? a couple days ago because I'm planning to watch that. Like, that's too funny.
Right, and it's a 1980 Roger Corman knockoff of Star Wars. And someone pointed out how when he saw it, his friend pointed out to him how, look, you can see the model of the starship still has glue dripping from the starship. Right. And I thought, well, gee, that really must have ended the career of that special effects supervisor who later went on to direct Terminator, Aliens, Titanic, and Avatar. But, low-budget movies are low-budget movies. What are you going to do?
Yep, very well. All right, so let's see. Anything else we want to discuss prior to jumping into spoilers and all that, General? Obviously, this guy...
Well, I think this is a slow burn horror film.
Eric had a good point, and Chrissy had a good point. Is it really a horror film?
It is a horror film, Phil. There's a monster in it. The monster attacks people. It's a horror film.
I still don't think it's
a horror film. It is a horror film, Phil. It's a horror film you don't like, but it's a horror film. It is as much a horror film as House of the Devil, as The Innkeeper. It doesn't have dramatic moments in it, but it is a horror film. It's a horror film that has a lot of
I think it's more of a fantasy film.
Phil, let me finish. It is a horror film that is a slow burn. It is focuses a lot on relationships. Phil, you're not letting me finish, Phil. That is focusing on the relationship, and the monster is a metaphor for the relationship issues between these two characters.
That's true.
We've seen films like this before. It's going to work for some people. It's not going to work for others. You really don't get a payoff on this until the very end of the film.
Chrissy, is this a horror film or is this magical realism?
Well, here's the interesting thing.
Here's
the interesting thing. I think that it's actually both, because horror, okay, there's an argument out there too that like ghost stories are actually magic realism. Magic realism is basically defined as when you have a story where the world is normal, the world is real, and then something otherworldly or strange comes into that environment and creates an issue for the characters. So this would classify as magic realism. Now, that said, horror and magic realism, that's why the lines are blurred. They can be the same. You know, a lot of horror films can be classified as magic realism. It just depends on how the story is structured, really.
Right. Magical realism is more to do with the rules of the world than it has to do with, you know, what kind of genre are you? You know, Ghostbusters, by that definition, is magical realism.
Right.
But then so is Salem's Lot.
But I think classifying this as horror is okay, because I would tend to lean with Mike. We do have a scary monster here, but I don't think there's one answer. If somebody, like you just asked me, what do you think it is? I honestly think it is a dark, weird romantic drama with a magical realist element, but it also has horror elements. And fantasy, yeah. Because, well, see, that's the other thing. Magic realism can also go into the fantasy world. It can also go into the – it can't really go into hard sci-fi, but it can go into some soft sci-fi. Like, you could argue that A Quiet Place is magic realism too, because it's these otherworldly things that come into the everyday life that destroy everything. Or at least the beginning of that story could probably be classified as that.
I also think it's fair to point out that movies can belong in one more genre. It doesn't have to be one or the other. And on IMDb, they have this listed as, in this order, drama, horror, sci-fi. And I think that is correct.
Yeah. I don't even know if I would go with sci-fi. I mean, it's sci-fi because there's a creature in it.
Well, and I think it's implied that the creature is alien in origin. I think that's why they put sci-fi in there.
Okay.
I think the creature could be created like Candyman. It's or Randall Flagg. It's just created because someone believes it's there.
Yeah, see, and there is, that's the thing about this movie that's interesting too. There are moments in here that would support that, Phil. If you found enough evidence, you know, it's like my dad always used to say, I've said this before, nobody can tell you you're wrong as long as you find stuff to support what it is you think it is.
Well, and here's the thing, I was really glad that the last scene in the movie happened, because up until then, too, you could argue that the monster didn't actually exist, and that would have pissed me off.
That would have been really disappointing, and I got to admit, that last scene, I know we're not in spoiler turf yet, but I laughed. I was just so shocked I laughed, because it's just a shocking, but you're like, what the fuck? It's like, oh my God. And I thought that actual scene was pretty well structured, but we'll talk about that when we get there.
Sure. All right. Anything else anybody wanted to bring up before we throw up the spoiler alert?
I think you've heard enough.
Sorry, go ahead.
Eric wanted to say something.
I was just saying, I think everyone's heard enough that they can go catch this. If they should know by now if they're going to be interested in it or not.
All right, well, Eric wanted to say something before the spoiler alert anyway.
I was just going to say that I found that our main character's name is Hank, and he has a best friend named Wade, and Wade was my favorite part of the movie.
I thought
he was really fun.
Dude, was shit that guy was saying that was cracking me up so bad. Like, I was laughing. I was like, is this guy for real? Like, it just, that was one of my, when I gave my little, first thoughts about the film, that was one of the things I was going to talk about a little later, is that the characters in this are standout. Wade is not a character that I am going to forget. Like, if I watch this movie again, I'm going to watch it just to see freaking Wade, because he cracked me up. So anyway,
I would concur. Wade was the best part, because I texted Eric at one point last night as I was watching the film without spoiling anything, intentionally didn't want to spoil it just because he hadn't seen it. And then I said that, you know, I wasn't enjoying the film. And then the very next scene, that was like the 22-minute mark. And then the very next scene was when Wade comes in and starts talking about Panthers and all this other stuff. And and they say, make sure you get your rifle in it. And then he comes with a fire axe. And so, you know, it was a lot of funny stuff there. So that was good for about 10 minutes to the film, because this Wade guy, as everybody has said, was a great character. He was funny. Some good levity in the movie.
Indeed.
Yeah. All right, so we'll throw out the spoiler alert, and we'll discuss anything and everything. Mike kind of mentioned already that a lot of film is as metaphorical, and then Chrissy and I were discussing that, that it was a lot of metaphorical stuff going on too. So we're going to dissect and critique, not just review, and since it's a quote-unquote metaphorically written movie, we'll have a lot of that critique and symbolism and all that kind of stuff.
The rest of us are going to sit back and listen to Christy go down.
With all the symbolism? Oh, yeah. Yeah, Christy, hey,
I'm ready to go to work, folks. I'm ready. Mm-hmm. And when I'm actually sober tonight, so you don't have to listen to me spout things while I'm drunk.
The question is, for how long?
For everything.
No. Believe me, I have been on enough virtual happy hours in the last week that I think I'm pretty much tapped on the booze for a little bit.
Well, if we do go down the you know, a hole and never come back up. You always blame the person that's not here, so it's all Abe's fault.
It is.
Abe's fault.
Agreed.
All right. So, where do we want to start? Eric. We forgot all about that.
Wiki. All right. When his girlfriend suddenly disappears, leaving a cryptic note as her only explanation, Hank's comfortable life and his sanity begin to crack. Then, from the woods surrounding his house, something terrible starts trying to break in.
There you go. Yep, that's a good wiki because it doesn't give out too much without spoiling anything. So basically it's a couple that's been together for about 10 years. They live in a house that has been in the family of the lead actors. What's his name again, Eric? The lead character. Hanks, thank you. Hanks' family for a while, so they live together. They seem fairly happy, but there's some things where they're not really communicating as much as they should, and so as a result, there's some I guess rough edges there. And then it goes back and forth for a little bit between the present and the past. The past is the happy moments between the two couples, and then the present's where a monster or something, a panther, a bear, or something is trying to break into the house after midnight. And that's where we get the title. Even though the title was actually called something else before. I forget what it was called. But
well, I think one of the interesting opening images of this film is that we see her the girl, whose name is Abby, we see her walking in a tangle of grasses. And I made note of that, and I wasn't sure why I made note of that, but then as the movie progressed and we got to sort of get a look at their relationship issues, it really is kind of she's trying to navigate this very complicated situation, not only between her and Hank, but also in herself. You know, it becomes clear later on why she took off on him. She has her own tangle of issues to figure out. And in many ways, she is a victim of her own choice. So that was also a very interesting spin that they put on that, where she was sort of blaming him, but at the same time, well, dude, it was your choice to do this. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's not like he was like, I'm going to tie you down. Like,
right. Yeah. Because they have 10 years together, right? They've been together for 10 years, and every so often, I mean, the joke is, if they don't ask you to get married within a year, you move on because they're wasting your time, you know. And so you could technically say that she's being stupid because she should have left him a long time ago. And then we get hints that she wants a child. He doesn't. There's hints that she wants to go on, you know, vacations like normal people do. He doesn't. And so there's a lot of miscommunication there. Unfortunately, and the thing is that that's interesting. Even though I didn't like this film, I'm sure I got a lot to talk about because the characters' stories are filled in pretty well. But the thing is that I think they were both silly because first of all, you could tell that she really had no issue staying in that house and staying in that town. She just wanted more, which is the vacations and the children and the normal life. While his life was, I'm satisfied just hanging with you in this house and owning the bar that we own down the street, and that's it. And they never sat down to communicate what they really wanted, and that's all they had to do. And I don't think there would have been any issues, because by the time the film ends, when the demons, quote-unquote monster, is destroyed, all that could have been taken away had they just – she sat down and said, Hank – I really do want to have a family, and I really do believe that we should get married, and I really do believe that I love this place, I love the bar, and I want to stay here. However, I still want to go to the beach, or I still want to visit New York City, or I still want to see the Eiffel Tower. And she doesn't do that.
You're right. Well, the thing is, communication is a two-way, in any relationship, communication is a two-way street. And yes, there is some onus on her to speak up for herself, to advocate for herself. However, when you're in a relationship with someone for that length of time, you also should be paying attention and considerate of their needs, and maybe be looking for things that are non-verbal. I mean, look, we were with that couple for less than 90 minutes, and we picked up all our problems without any issue. Mm-hmm. And she hadn't said them until the end of the film, and we already picked up on it beforehand.
And there's also the fact that if they were together for that long, they probably should have had some of these conversations a long time ago, like, do you want kids? That's kind of a basic, if you're going to be in a really long-term relationship with somebody, to have that conversation and figure it out. Cause if one wants them and the other doesn't, that's kind of a deal breaker.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of miscommunication in this movie. However, I think is realistic miscommunication. People have these issues in relationships all the time. Otherwise, everybody would have a perfect relationship and there would be no divorce.
Right. And I think, you know, too, what Phil was pointing out about, like, it kind of goes back and forth in time. And he says, you know, you can't unwrap a memory, but you can, because what he's remembering about her is all of his flashbacks. It's actually kind of relevant. It's interesting. It almost compares to the situation that I think we are all in right now, which is we are in a current crisis right now, and we are having flashbacks of our past, and that past becomes very dreamlike, and he needs to kind of and this is one of the things I thought the movie did very well, was showing you that past without confusing you.
Mm-hmm.
But it was what they chose to show in the past too. They really only focused on the happy moments where clearly he was idolizing her and clearly she was swept up in the romance of everything, which she mentions later. You know, we never see a flashback of them having a bad time. There is the one flashback at her birthday. Oh, which is interesting. It's all about her birthdays too. We'll talk about that later, because that was very significant as well. But I think it wasn't only about the lack of communication. It was also about the fact that they were just not really in tune with each other. It was almost like one of these relationships where she thinks it's like this and she sees this man as one way, and he thinks it's like this and he sees her as another way, but they don't really see each other for who they really are. That was kind of right. What I got out of those flashbacks.
Chrissy, mm-hmm. I think the best two lines of the whole film explains their whole situation. And it was when she says, I was able to go to Miami and have a tamale from a bicycle salesman. And he says, I didn't want to go to your reunion because they're all stuffy people with ties and white shirts that drink wine and martinis, basically. And I'm paraphrasing it. They're not exactly that.
Yeah.
And the thing is that they're both being stupid, because he could have just sucked it up and gone to the goddamn reunion because, yep, I love you and it will be, you know, it's going to, you're going to be having fun. So I want to go with you and, you know, I'll enjoy it for what it is. And big deal about the tamale, you can just make it at home. So
that's not the same thing, Phil. Saying I want to go out and have a nice steak dinner, we can have a steak at home, not the same thing.
No, wait, right. Mike. I understand what Phil's point is. I understand what Phil's point. Go ahead, Phil.
Right, and so
I know what you're trying to say.
So in other words, it didn't have to do with the tamale, Mike. The point, and getting it off a bike on the corner of Miami South Beach. The point is that. She wanted to do something else instead of just sitting at home with him continuously, but she wanted to do it with him. And
right. And
the problem is that they were both looking at things, I guess, their way, instead of looking at it as a couple and at least giving. In other words, you're supposed to give a little to get a little, and neither of them were giving to get.
Well, and Phil, you're absolutely right. Nothing you just said is incorrect. However, you seem to have a problem with this in this movie when people are actually stupid like this in real life all the time. So I don't understand why it's an issue for you.
Oh, no, well, for this, well, that's the problem, right? I mean, if they weren't doing, if in real life or in this movie, people compromise more, in other words, just suck up the reunion and not all the people at the reunion are going to be stuffy shirt dirtbags. Mm-hmm. And for her to maybe do things instead of, all right, maybe he doesn't want to go to Miami Beach to eat a tamale on a bike, but he must have some interest. How about we go do that? Your interest, Hank, is you like to take hikes up mountains. So let's go to West Virginia and climb Appalachia. You know, but they don't do that. They just mm-hmm. say they don't. They go on, Mike.
But even so, sometimes you suck it up as a mm-hmm. couple and you do something the other person would like to do.
Right.
Sometimes you do that. It, not everything has to. Look, I don't believe in the, you know, the whole opposites attract thing. You have to have things in common with your partner, but you do also have to have, I think, some alone time, right? You have to have some things that are yours to give you some space.
Well, I don't think
most couples work 24/7.
Right.
You have to have your. But here it's clear she was saying, I want to go to my family. I want to do this. And he kept saying no, no, no. And so, yeah, she could have advocated for herself more and he could have listened and flexed a little bit more. And certainly this is not a new thing.
She wasn't explaining why it was important. I mean, when someone comes up to you and say the tamale and bicycle, you understand what she meant. I understood what she meant. But not everybody's going to understand what she meant, so she should have put it in a perspective that he could understand.
Not everyone
is very introspective. She may not have understood it herself as to what her issue was.
Here's another point, is that even though they were having these communication issues and he wasn't listening to her and he wasn't compromising to do what she wanted to do on her end, there were much, much, much better ways she could have dealt with that situation other than just leaving the note saying, I'm going to be gone for a while. And right. not returning any of his calls.
Right.
That's the reason.
And that's what I'm trying to say, Mike, is that I'm in the middle. I'm not picking a side. I'm not picking a gender. I'm saying that they were both stupid. And she should have finally sat him down and said, I've been here for 10 years. We're not married yet. I want kids. You don't. What's the deal? I want it. What's wrong with my reunion? And instead, her thing was to run away. And again, not everybody is strong to, you know, put their fist down and say, come on, let's talk this over. But it was kind of a cheesy thing for her to run. And I mean, she got her point through because she finally came back and he got all messed up. So it worked in a sense.
However, well, there is one interesting thing, though, about her disappearing. In that, and the note and everything, is that she does say to him, I told you I was going and you don't remember. Now, we also see him drinking an awful lot of alcohol. An awful lot of alcohol. We also see that somebody says the brother-in-law or the potential brother-in-law, because he's not officially a brother-in-law yet, says, hey, dude, you haven't even been at Jesse's, which is the name of their bar, in a week. So what, you know, is he, there's one of those nice little plants in there that kind of tells us that he might be off his rocker a little bit and maybe not remembering. However, I agree with you. She should have at least returned the call. And it's interesting because in the beginning of the movie, she says, just kill me or kill me and eat me afterwards, which is kind of a metaphor for their entire relationship, right? Because he kills her ability to be the person that she really wanted to be, but she let him, you know? And so it's like, kill me and eat me afterwards sort of implies. So it was almost like she was saying, are we just going to fuck or is this going to be a long-term thing where I have to give myself up to be in it? Which I thought was interesting, but she should have called him back.
Right. And let's say she's too chicken to talk to him in person or call him on the phone because, you know, he could start arguing and saying, what do you mean? You know, that nonsense. At least she could have wrote a long letter or an email or something. I mean, she had to do something. I guess her way was to disappear for 4 weeks and shock him. But I don't think it was fulfilling enough for what she should have done probably even 7 years ago, never mind now, you know.
Well, I will also say too that what was kind of fun to watch about this movie was, okay, like, I'm the only woman here, so this is kind of, you guys can feel free to defend yourselves, but I have seen so many men, when their girlfriends leave them, behave just like this. Like, calling and leaving the message, oh, I miss you, the bills are gone, they're all nice. And then, you know, 10 minutes later, he's calling
by the way, your cat is fucking dead.
Dad's fucking dead, well, bitch. Like, and well, I was picking up, and then it's like, when his friend goes to hug him, Wade, they're like, okay, you want to go get drunk? Like, that's like totally a guy thing. It's like, oh, I'm going to go drown my sorrows in alcohol every day, like forever.
Well,
and I thought that was sort of fun.
This relationship, too, is a little different than just two people dating, because it's almost common law in a sense, because they're living together, they own property together, they all that. So it's almost a marriage without the vows. So, right. So obviously it's a little, the whole thing is, it makes it a different dynamic than, say, if you're just dating someone and you're very close, sure, you're dated, but you don't live together and you don't own the property together and you don't have a bedroom together where if you break up, everything's fucked up. Here, if you're not, you don't have any of that and it's not common law, when you break up, you can pretty much do a cut and it's done as long as they don't come stalking you. But something like this, They even if they do talk and it falls apart, or if they do talk and come back together, if they come back together, there's no problems. But if it falls apart, then there's a lot of issues, because how do they split the bar? How do they split this? And, you know, on and on. You have to buy the other person out. This may be going way too far from the point of the movie.
It is.
Okay, fair enough. I thought it was after it was going there. But anyway, go on, Mark. You
right. Well, look, we've seen stories like this, and a good example that what I thought was a much better film, though, was Eyes Wide Shut, which is an entire film about the lack of communication in a relationship. Mm-hmm. But on an individual level, we've all seen, it's kind of a cliche, and I guess it's probably why I was not as enamored of this film as I was with The Battery, that you have the dude in the relationship who refuses to grow up.
Yeah.
And be responsible.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
You have the woman in the relationship who, you know, is trying to stand up, who is not standing up for herself, right? And it's now, I think there's a reason it's a cliche, is that there is truth to it. You know, I think there is certainly truth to guys who don't want to grow up.
Oh my God, yes.
And there is, yes. And there is truth to women who, you know, to subsume their own wants and desires to feed it into the relationship and to keep the relationship
without
going.
Saying it, right?
And this is, I think, what happens. You know, when you have unspoken wants and needs and desires, you know, just bottled up over a 10-year period, right? Or maybe a 12-year
period. And just hoping. The other person figures it out on their own.
Right.
Right. It also shows what happens when you drink peanut wine.
Well, and there's also something to be said for that, too, because, you know, you're talking about women, you know, kind of like sublimating themselves to stay, you know, in the relationship. There is also something to be said for that, too, because women – I think I'm a woman, so I can attest to this. So, you know, you can send your hate mail to darkdiscussions@AOL.com. Attention, Chrissy. But I think women tend to, when they really fall in love with someone, and I think it's because we're actually engineered to give birth to things. I swear to God, that's why it is. When we fall in love with someone, it is really deep and really hard and really plunging. And there is very little, I think, that can get us off of that track. So what starts happening is, if the guy turns out to be immature or a loser or an asshole or whatever, you find this way to sort of justify the disappointment. You're like, oh no, I really love him, so I'm going to stay. Oh no, I really love him, so I'm going to stay and sublimate myself a little more. Oh, I really love him, I'm going to stay, so I'm going to sublimate myself even further. And then at some point, you reach a moment, or at least I do as a woman, and I go, all right, I've had enough of your shit now. And that was, even though she still loved him, I think that's probably what happened to her, is she just kept staying and staying and hoping things were going to change and hoping things were going to get better. And you do have a good point about her not coming forward and saying, look, I want this, look, I want that. However, there was a moment at her birthday party where the other couple, you know, the woman says she's pregnant. Mm-hmm. And there is an extremely pained look on Abby's face. It was really well acted and really well done.
But it was
well
only
done.
after the Hank said, oh, man, I couldn't handle a baby. I would just want it, you know, if they could come out at the age of 8, because then I wouldn't have to change diapers.
Right,
then
right.
She started getting that expression.
Right, but I think I got the sense that maybe she had at least flirted with talking about this with him, or that they maybe had a discussion. It does not make sense to me that in 10 years that conversation would not have even come up once. So what I'm thinking is it might have come up once or twice in 10 years. He might have given her pushback, and then she sat there and said, but I really love him. I'm just going to hope he changes.
Or, yeah,
right?
Because
exactly. A lot of women do that. They sit there and they go,
well,
I changed him.
And that's what happened.
When he said,
I wish they came out at 8 and I wouldn't have to change diapers, her expression was twofold, I think. One, he still hasn't changed and he still doesn't want kids. And two, I'm depressed because I want kids and I'm not going to be able to have them, at least now.
Right. Not with this guy in this place.
Mm-hmm. And most likely what he did, when they had that conversation over the years, he probably pushed it off. He probably laughed it off. You know, we'll have that conversation another time.
Yeah, or we're not married.
You know, or we're not married. Or what are you in such a rush for?
Yeah, let's make sure the bar is doing good first. Whatever he says, yeah.
Right, just finding a way of brushing it. Because to him, it's not a serious conversation. And probably, because this is a luxury that guys have, it's probably something he probably didn't put a lot of thought into, because he doesn't have to put as much thought into it, right? Women are pushed to have thoughts about children literally since preschool, right? And their attitude towards infants, babies, as they're, you know, they get the little doll they carry around. You know, that's being thrust in there and kind of in their face as something that they have to be thinking about, because it is a much bigger commitment for them in many ways.
Well, and also too, if you know, and that's a really good point, Mike, because what I was saying about when women fall deeply and plungingly in love and they fall harder than guys do, I really believe this, because we are built to give birth to things. That is a risk to your health. It's a risk to your lifestyle. It's going to change your body. It changes your brain chemistry. Essentially, you are making a giant sacrifice for the man that you love. So if you do not fall that hard in love with that guy, you're not going to want to have kids with him. Because you'd be like, dude, I'm not doing that shit. I don't love you that much. I'm really serious. That's what some of us think.
But it also allows you to rationalize it.
Now, as Mike said, this is a kind of a cliche of the two, the male and the female. But we want everybody to know that doesn't mean everybody's like that. We know men that
absolutely
do anything for a woman because they think
you are all individuals.
Exactly.
We are all individuals.
I'm not. Yes. Yes.
Right. I mean,
there's a reason there's cliches, as a lot of people say, or stereotypes. But again, not everybody is like that. Eric is absolutely right. So this here, we're only talking about these two characters here. So.
In the context of this film, yes.
Yes.
But if you have complaints, send the complaints to darkdiscussions@AOL.com. Please address them to Chrissy. That is spelled ABESTINNEY. Chrissy.
right.
Oh, my God. That's fabulous. Okay. So Yeah, and I think also what's interesting too is I you know what I liked? I liked the way the weirdness of the creature was sort of introduced in this. Like, he just mentions it on one of his messages that he leaves for her, and you're just kind of like, what? Like, you know, it's like, oh yeah, and since you left, there's this creature that's coming around at night. And I mean, we all knew going into it from the log line what this movie was about. Like, so we knew that. We were expecting it.
Yeah, the movie poster.
Right. But imagine if you hadn't, and you just watched this film and had no idea. And here you're looking at this relationship story, and then all of a sudden he's like, yeah, there's this creature.
Well, Chrissy, I think you're forgetting. There's a couple of scenes where the 6 minutes in, he shoots the door. And then there's another scene where he starts taking pitch through the hole as well. Yeah, so
we know he shoots the truck.
Yeah, he shoots at the truck, and then looks outside, and the door's all scratched, and then he tells the cop that, his buddy Wade, and they're trying to say it's a bear, Wade says it's a panther, and then someone else says it's kids, you know.
Well, I think that it was interesting because, again, this is where we get into, is this guy really crazy? Even though we see him taking pictures, we do hear the growling, okay, but we're still not 100% sure that this is not in his head, right? Because he says to the cop, well, this wasn't a black bear that did this because they skipped the garbage and the cat food.
That's right.
You know? And it's like, and while that's true, it almost made me go, oh, wait, is this maybe not, like, is this not real? Do you know what I mean?
Well,
and then
the point in the movie where I decided that there was at least something happening and it wasn't in his head is when he caught it with the shotgun. And there was some blood on the porch. It was like, okay, he hit something. There's blood there. That's physical evidence. There's something coming up to the porch.
Right.
That is exactly when I realized that it wasn't in his head either, because Wade saw it, right? Wasn't it Wade?
He saw the blood.
Right. So the second person, for the first time, the second person sees irrefutable evidence, not just like scratches in the door, which he could have done himself, or the shotgun blast, which he could have thought there was somebody outside, something outside, so he shot at it. You know, that's really the first time that we get the proof.
That the monster, obviously it's a metaphor for what's going on with him, but can we agree that the monster was created through his imagination, similar to like Candyman or Randall Fragg or something like that, where if she didn't leave and his relationship was the same as before, there would be no monster. And that's why I think it's magical realism. You know what I'm saying?
I think it's interpretation. It's a valid interpretation, but I don't think it's necessarily the only one. Because I mean, I would have to rewatch the film, but I don't know that there was any hard evidence for it. I think it's more that there's no evidence against it.
Right.
Well, that's fair. Right. I mean, you're absolutely right. However, if we can really look at this film and say, okay, what's this film really about? The monster is a metaphor for this guy's problems or the relationship or whatever. If that wasn't there, there'd be no monster.
Well, actually, the way that I interpreted the monster, because then I got surprised in the second half of the film when she came back.
Mm-hmm.
I almost took that as, okay, so she's left and he is struggling to accept this, right? So before we understand in the film that she is going to come back later, right, there's a couple of things that he does that indicate that he is starting to accept that she is not coming back, right? The first thing he does, the first beat, because it is a three beat, is the deer head, where he takes the painting down and hangs up the, you know, the animal head.
The heck fell out of the deer head? Does anybody know what fell out of the deer head?
I don't know. I missed that.
It was a little black box, and it made me, I thought it might have been an engagement ring.
Yeah, maybe it was his engagement ring. You're right.
Which is what we saw at the bottom. Right, but they do you do see it at the bottom of the wine glass at the end.
Yeah, that's
and that's when you get that later. Yeah. And then the second beat that he needs to accept it, that she's not coming back, right? This is him trying to heal from he thinks she's gone forever. He's shooting all their bottles of wine, you mm-hmm. know?
Right.
Now, the thing is...
very important to her. I was going to bring that up later
right.
about the... But go on, Chrissy.
But the interesting thing is that... while these three beats are happening, right, the instances of the creature getting more violent, they're increasing. They're increasing in violence level. They're increasing in, you know, what do you say, closeness, you know, mm-hmm. proximity. They're in intensity and proximity. They're increasing. And to me, in that first half of the film, the monster represented his own like loneliness. Like, in other words, the monster was trying to wake him up, going, you need to accept that she is not coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's right at the end of that sequence, which is the third beat, where the cat does get killed. And he actually sees the creature. And mm-hmm. that is the final moment where he needs to accept, oh my God, she has left me. She is not coming back. And then he goes in, turns the couch over, right? Puts all the pillows meticulously back, like everything's going back to normal. This is going to be his life going forward now without her.
Mm-hmm.
And he sits on the couch and the couch breaks. And it was just a very interesting metaphor for the life that he thought he had. Is now broken, and he has faced the ultimate demon of her abandonment,
which is the monster.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. I was a little upset after she came back, because at that point they had given us like hard evidence that the creature actually existed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they stay up together, right, waiting for it to show up, and it doesn't.
Yeah,
so
I
like,
had a
fuck. Are they going to make it imaginary? That's going to suck.
Well, I actually had a little bit of a problem with that as far as a story consistency issue.
Yeah, me too.
I'm a little bit, I mean, I don't know how you could really fix that and still tell the same story, but that definitely for me, that was a hole because it wasn't consistent.
Well, was it showing up? I wasn't
think?
Paying attention. Was it showing up at midnight at the stroke?
No, he always said after midnight. Just as the film's title, he didn't say. He said it usually comes after midnight. So maybe right around now. But I don't think he ever said the stroke of midnight. They never said the witching hour.
Yeah, there wasn't a timestamp per se.
Right, and by the way, the fact that their relationship seems to be mended. And the creature still attacks might be evidence that the creature isn't literally metaphorical, isn't literally
a manifestation. Ultimately, we understand that. But at that point in the film, when all of a sudden the monster didn't show up, I was just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I kind of was too. And at that point, I took it to mean it was imaginary and that he had actually shot the cat himself, even though we see the creature.
Mm-hmm.
That, the creature that he saw was really all in his own mind.
Right.
Yeah, it was unreliable now.
Shot her cat.
Trying to trick
so,
her. Yeah.
Right. Even though we saw the blood, and then I was like, oh, well, maybe there was something else he shot. I don't know. Maybe he, you know, mm-hmm. there's still.
Bears and Panthers.
Yep. I mean, oh my God, that guy in the band, yes. And that was interesting too. There's panthers and they're like rebounding. So they're going to start having sex or whatever he says. Oh my
they're
God.
They're fucking.
They're fucking right now. Wait, I think I wrote it down. What did he say?
Make sure you. I still like, he was a riot, but I still love the line where he goes, make sure you bring your rifle tomorrow when we go hunting for the creature. And then he comes with a fire axe. It's like, what the?
Yeah. Oh, they're on the rebound too. Panthers, they're on the rebound too, though. They're fucking again. That's what he says. Like, it's all casual. And then when he says Abby left. Now, that was interesting too, in that we see a prior scene with Wade. But again, I think what's interesting
is. Yeah, Wade at the bar. We meet him at the bar.
But we see before Abby comes back, there are all of these masculine symbols, right? Symbols connected with masculinity that are showing up. For example, the antlers. There's the antlers all over that house. And antlers are, And they're from the buck. You know what I mean? The antlers are from the buck, and the buck
is
really...
It's a male.
Yeah, it's a male, but it's also a symbol of masculinity. If you get into paganism, it's, you know, got all of these connections to leadership and strength and all of these qualities that we typically, okay, quote, in quotes, typically, would associate with, you know, maleness or masculinity. So in addition to that, what's also fun is really, I mean, the two guys are getting together eating a pile of bacon, you know. That was fabulous. There's guns everywhere. Everybody's got beer. Then he runs into his friend Wade.
What was that? That whiskey they were drinking, or whatever that drink was.
Whiskey, yep, there was whiskey. Yeah. Wade drinks gorilla farts. He drinks the drainage
right.
from
the drink. Right.
No, it's just whatever's in the bar mat.
Phil, right. That well, is. The other people had the shots.
Right.
The bartender, it was a woman, and then Hank has regular shots, and then he drinks the gorilla. Wade drinks the gorilla crap, but then they buy him a real shot afterwards.
Right. But he does, you know, Hank does the typical guy things, like I said earlier about after breakup. Like, he goes to the bar and he doesn't tell his friend Wade right away. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's already seen him, so he doesn't tell his friend Wade until whenever they get together again that Abby's left. No, they're drinking, they're hanging out. He's eyeing the bartender, Jane. Clearly, there's a little bit of a sexual innuendo going on there, and then even later on, Abby does mention that. So I just had a lot of fun with this because I saw that there was a statement being made here about, I think, the dangers of shutting down your emotional side, which is typically what society has taught men to do. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Conditioning. We're always talking about conditioning. And
toxic masculinity.
Well, I don't know if it's toxic. I mean, I didn't really...
A human conscript.
It can be. It's not always.
Yeah. I know toxic masculinity. I didn't really see it in this film. I saw it as masculinity that was damaging to himself, maybe, but not...
That's,
I wouldn't call
kind
it toxic.
Of how I think of toxic masculinity.
No, I think of toxic masculinity as more like being an asshole. That's
kind
of how
pig.
I feel about it. Misogynist shit.
Yeah,
he
wasn't a misogynist pig. He was just...
He was just
I just call that being a misogynistic pig. To me, toxic masculinity, maybe I misunderstand the definition of the term, but to me, toxic masculinity means the manliness that you have been taught that's actually self-harmful.
Okay. I'm looking it up. Right?
I think it's
like
more
like
when it spills
your
into...
Emotions.
Oh,
I think
okay.
It's
here we go.
When it spills into the harmfulness to others.
Toxic masculinity is thus defined by adherence to traditional male gender roles that consequently stigmatize and limit the emotions boys and men may comfortably express while statusing other emotions such as anger. Behaviors of toxic masculinity include extreme self-reliance, the need to do everything on their own, shame, disassociation, and avoidance of emotional expression, extreme aspiration for physical, sexual, and intellectual dominance, devaluation of women's opinions, bodies, and sense of selves, condemning anything feminine within another man or equating affection for another man as being sexually attracted to other men, resulting in higher social isolation and loneliness as well as lack of social cohesion.
It's basically saying anything that a man is scum because they're completely
no,
different.
If
someone wants to
no.
rely on themselves, there's nothing wrong with that. And it, versus treating women like shit, that's they're completely different things. That's stupid.
No, it's to the point. No, because yes, it's not an or, Phil. It's not an or. It's when you're doing these things to the point where you're devaluing the other things, not self-reliance as a whole, as a bad thing. It's self-reliance to the exclusion of being able to reach out for others for help.
Yes. Yes. I mean, you know, I know somebody
not being
like,
able to do things for themselves is considered a sign of weakness.
All right. Well,
and therefore
well,
you're a pussy.
All right. Well, either way, this term wasn't part of this movie. I didn't feel.
No, I didn't either. That's why I wanted to look it up, because like I said, to me, toxic masculinity is yes. And Eric, I do agree with you. It harms themselves too. Mm-hmm. But I think that people who are that toxic, honest to God, they're not even aware. Like, they're not. Like, I have known a few men, at least more than one, that are, you know, do this toxic masculinity thing, and they absolutely think there is nothing wrong with them. There is, they don't realize that they're hurting.
Well,
they really don't. They're dumb. Yeah.
Well, but this guy wasn't doing any of that. What he was doing
he
just thought she was comfortable in the relationship when she wanted something more, and he was a clueless idiot, and she was too timid to bring it up.
Well, and clearly there's that moment where he tells Wade in the woods, oh, she left, and Wade gives him a hug and they hug. So
right?
Yeah, there's no toxic masculinity going on in this movie, I don't think. He's just shut off from his emotions. Yeah, he's clueless, and he is, like I said, men have been conditioned not to cry, not to show their emotions.
Right.
There are men that do defy that, absolutely, but they've been conditioned to do that, and so that's why I say this character is a traditionally conditioned male.
Or as Mike says, a cliche. A cliche.
Yeah, I would kind of buy that.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, next. What else are we talking about? Let's move on. Let's move on, people.
I just want to say that I really liked the last scene of the movie. But there was one thing missing for me, which is that, I mean, you can get into all the symbolism there. It's there for sure. But like, to me, I wanted the moment where he was going to stand up and yell at the cop, "How's that for some physical fucking evidence?"
Yeah.
And I also love how he just tore those antlers off the buck and just went to town on that thing in front of everybody else who had not 10 minutes previously just been giving him all sorts of shit about how he's crazy and this thing doesn't actually exist. And he just fucking wipes the thing out right in front of all of them. If that had been me, there would have been some "I told you so" going on.
Right. Which, well, you needed to go beyond, because the credits start rolling right after that. So I think he was going to be "I'm telling you so" for the next 5 to 10 years at least.
Right. Remember that time I killed that fucking alien right in front of you when you said I was crazy?
well, they had to end it where it is because, again, you're not going to have the government come in and all this other. The point wasn't the point of the film. The point of the film was the relationship.
Right.
And that's it. So obviously they weren't going to have any of that other stuff in.
I missed it. I wanted to see it.
Yeah. That would be a, Eric, that would be a 4-beat on the, on the deer head, right? Because they mentioned in the bar, then we see it in storage, and we see him, and then hang it up. Actually, wait, hang it up. Then she mentions it. That's 4. This is a 5-beat. This is the 5th beat we've seen of that deer head, of it being mentioned. I think the third time we actually see it.
Well, even better, takes the antlers, and that's masculinity, and he uses his masculinity to become a real man and be an equal partner to her by basically agreeing.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what that whole thing that he does at the end is about.
That's what a real man is. Yep. Is you take your masculinity and you use it wisely. And he's finally using it wisely because he kills the monster. And he says, you know what, hon? We're getting married. We're going to have those kids. And because she had already said she was willing to stay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Meaning
we're going to stay there. It's just that now we're going to do the things you want to do too, which is we're going to go to Miami and wherever and so on and have the kid. So that's a true man. And that's what that was
all. Yep. That's totally what that was about. So, and that's why I said earlier too, that the monster really was a symbol of you need to accept that she's gone, but you also need to accept that she's gone because you didn't really give her what you want. Now, on the flip side, like we already talked about, it was her fault too. You know,
right. She did finally have the conversation with him at 11:55 before midnight.
Right.
And that's where she explained everything, what she wanted and why this relationship's a problem. Because originally she starts out really mean, like, I don't want to hear banjos anymore. Why are we in this town? This is a nothing town, you know, all that. But then she says, it's okay. I like this stuff. But why can't we do these other things? And and then when he has all the friends over that, you know, the next day. And they're talking at the table, and he says, there's no aliens here because why would they come to this town? They would go to, they'd go to fucking Washington, D.C. They wouldn't come here. This is nothing town. And then he basically, this is his way of telling her, I now see what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then when he kills the monster, that's the physical proof. And then you see the ring in the bottle of wine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think too,
they compromise at the end. She's willing to stay, and he's willing to do the things that she wants as well. That's what's wonderful about the ending.
Yes.
Yes, they reconcile. That's the whole point
of
the story.
They figure it all out.
Just reconciled, because you can reconcile and still have the problems. They reconciled, and...
Well, then you don't truly reconcile.
What's that?
Then I don't think you truly reconcile.
Right. You can reconcile, but still have the problems like a week later and go, oh, shit, it's still fucked up. But I think this is a real reconcile where they actually solve the problems.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because Phil, did you say that this film was produced by the people who did Spring or directed by it?
Produced and co-starred. But... basically what it is one of the people that did Spring produced this film, and one of them played the cop. But the film was directed and written by the lead actor, who was the guy that did The Battery. And the thing is that this is another group of those young directors, like the mumblecore ones that were around like 5 years ago, that are now coming together, like the guy that did VFW and the guy that did The Battery and the guys that did Spring. They're all working together and helping each other out, because the guy that did VFW did Bliss, and the lead actor in this, who wrote this film and directed The Battery, had a fairly starring role in Bliss. And then the guys that did Spring, who are indie directors as well, produced this film, and actually one of them starred in it. So it's one of those things where they're like kind of all together, even, and they all do different weird films, but they're all buddies and they help each other out. If that makes any sense, Chrissy?
Yeah, no, it does make sense. And one of the things I did also want to point out is the reason I wanted you to kind of clarify all that is because this movie in a way is also about shape-shifting. Right, because isn't Spring got that kind of shape-shifting vibe going on there?
Yeah, the monster, the girl is like that a Cthulhu
thing from Pompeii or whatever. Yeah,
comes and go through time and can shape-shift into like that squid creature.
But this, I think, is also dealing with shape-shifting because, like I said earlier, they're not really loving each other who they really are until they recognize they sort of are together. Romancing a concept of each other, really. And so these people are also shape-shifting too, because they are shape-shifting in each other's perceptions, as, you know, before they reconcile. And this is also really about how our relationships change us, how they form us, and how they affect our personalities. There was a really interesting story that, you know, I had picked up for 34 Orchard, and one of the lines in it was, I don't have it in front of me, but it's kind of goes with this idea, like every relationship, romantic relationship that you are in, kind of takes away a little piece of yourself, or shifts a piece of yourself, or morphs a piece of yourself, so that by the time you get to be with the one that you are truly supposed to be with, you are a shell of who you actually were. I did not say it as eloquently as this person wrote it, but that's basically the point. And I think I see elements of that in this movie, where it is also a discussion on how relationships change us. And the thing was, this guy didn't want to change, right? They keep showing us the past. And even though he looks a little bit younger and he's doing younger things and whatever, he's still, personality-wise, he is still the same in those flashbacks from 10 years ago as he is now. But you see her evolution, right?
Yep.
You see that she's clearly different from the young thing that he first, you know, met.
I would agree with that. That's a good point. Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, that's the romantic thing where the person you're supposed to be with, because again, you're with somebody, it's just random luck you met that person and whatever. You could have been born in Russia and you would have been marrying someone from Russia, you know. So it's just, a lot of it's arbitrary, and there isn't, it's not a pyramid where at the very top there's one person. It's more of a plateau. So depending on where you are in time and who you meet, there's, like, say, for every person there's 500 of those people, and you're going to find one of them because, you know, if you live in Japan, it's going to be someone from Japan or whatever, or, you know, random luck at a convention or something. But the point here that you're making, where they obviously had the puppy love and all that and the idealism and the future when they're, you know, 10 years ago, she's already thinking, okay, I found the guy, he's a great guy, whatever, and you know, eventually, you know, we're going to have the bar and we'll have a kid and, you know, I'll be able to do fun stuff with him, bring him to my reunion and go to Miami to the beach and all these other cool stuff, and then we can, you know, have our group of friends here and on and on. And he's probably thinking similar, like, oh, this is great, the young love, you know, I found this great girl, she's beautiful, we're best friends, and I think he even says that once in the film. But he's not thinking about the kid and these other things. And we don't know why. I mean, maybe he just doesn't want those things. Or maybe he's a chicken. Like, oh, my God, if I have a kid, my life changes. Or, oh, my God, if I have a kid, I'm older now. Or whatever. While she's more realistic and more mature. Because, she, like you said, he's still the same person 10 years later. While by the 10-year point in this film, even though she should have probably left him a long time ago, she's definitely grown and more mature and knows what she wants.
Mm-hmm.
I think you like this movie more than you thought you did, Phil.
You know what was funny is that like, for example, The Cure for Wellness, when we did that film, I didn't really like that film. I mean, it's not as bad as it's not as bad as I thought back then. Now that I look at it, it's more of a cool grindhouse film or a cult film. But a lot of these films that I don't like, except for Dave Ademe's and Evil Dead remake, I actually can still have a lot of good things to talk about, even if I don't like the film in general.
Mm-hmm.
So well, it wasn't a real horror film. That's what, I mean, like,
it was a real horror film. Phil,
it wasn't scary. It wasn't a scary horror film.
Doesn't matter, Phil. Doesn't matter.
I guess it's
doesn't
your
matter.
It's
doesn't
your
matter.
I'm not,
no,
I'm
it's not. It's not. No, it doesn't matter.
Yes, it is.
No, it doesn't matter.
Fight! Right.
You're wrong.
Fight.
Now, so one of the things I liked that I laughed at is right. that we get, I don't know, maybe it was an hour into the film or so, and I've been having this thought in my head. I think anyone who's watched enough horror films has had this thought, too, by this point in the film, at which point my wife has said, is she going to end up being the monster?
I kind of wondered that too.
I was thinking about that, and it's at that point that she basically, within 5 minutes, she returns, and she asks him about the monster, and he says something like, "I don't know, I kind of thought it might have been you."
And that's cheesy as hell if they did that, and even for them to say that in the film, because she wasn't the monster.
Because they acknowledge what I was thinking, what my wife was thinking, what Chrissy was thinking, which means at least three out of five people were thinking it, so they acknowledge the elephant in the room.
Wrong. I didn't say it was wrong, Mike. I was saying that would have been stupid if they made...
If they had done it, yeah.
Well, they had, but yeah, not mentioning it, I don't think it's cheesy.
Well, it's not cheesy, but it's kind of rude, because she's not a monster. Let me rephrase, Mike. If you like the woman character in this film, which I didn't naturally like either of the characters that much, but it's unfair to call one person in a relationship a monster when neither of them are monsters.
He didn't call her a monster. He is wondering where the monster came from and wondering if it might actually not be her, because she disappeared and the monster appeared.
Right, but for him to think that she could have been the monster is kind of
no
sad.
I think you're stretching to criticize.
I don't think so at all, because I would be pissed if
you're stretching like plastic.
I was her and he said, "You're the monster." That's why she got up and left.
He didn't say you're the monster. He said, "I've been wondering that, you know, I'm half wondering if you were
right,
the monster."
But to imply that thought that there was a moment that you could be the monster,
that pissed her off,
and that's why she got up and left.
No, she didn't.
I think I'm going to go get a beer and a lawn chair.
I'm
imagining things.
Yeah.
Getting your sequence of events completely wrong.
Get your popcorn.
So, the other thing I like is there was a song I really liked from The Battery, which is from a group called Rock Central Plaza. It's called Anthem for the Recently Defeated. And it gets a spotlight in that film, and I laughed because he brought it back in this movie too, and I just kind of liked that he did that. And it's a film, a song that I've had in my Halloween rotation now.
Mike, could you please instant message me or text me the name of that song and the artist, because I'll use that as the end song for this episode.
Sure.
I'll check and see if it's on IMDb here.
Rock Central Plaza, Anthem for the Recently Defeated.
All right, but continue, Mike. I was just saying
I liked that, and I liked the fact that they hung the hat on, just sort of like Die Hard 2 did the whole "I can't believe this whole thing is happening again," that they hung a hat on the thing everybody was thinking of at just about the same time that Pam and I were vocalizing it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was the monster, not her.
Fight. Good.
Fight.
All right, even if I thought her tamale was cheesy.
Are we done?
We probably are.
I honestly don't know or don't think that there's really too much left to talk about with regard to this movie.
We've beaten this bastard with a baseball bat. No, with a fire axe.
Yeah. I think baseball bat's appropriate. I mean, he did have the catcher's mask tattoo on his arm.
We stabbed this motherfucker with some antlers.
That's right. We shotgunned that car bad.
Well, you know what I kind of loved? I love that scene at the end where they're doing this terrible karaoke. Oh, my God. Love that song, Stay. I love that song. So I'm sitting here and they start playing that and I'm going, oh, it's like a chick song. He's going to sing her a chick song. Like, I was like, this is so great. But then to have that thing just show up out of nowhere, because that's why I thought that was brilliantly built.
Don't forget, the song was for Julie, too.
Yes, that's right, true. Right? That was so funny. I did appreciate that they had that kind of little joke. But one of the things I thought was really funny was the movie actually made you relax.
Right.
You know, you actually relax.
You're like, okay, there's going to be the happy ending.
Yeah, there is no monster. It really wasn't his head or whatever. Or maybe it went away because whatever. And then bam, out of fucking nowhere. And it was like, holy shit. I started laughing. It was so funny. I mean, I'm sure that, you know, it wasn't their intent to make it funny, but for me, it just was humorous.
So you know? All you people who are pissed that it eats cats, it got its. It yeah. got it bad.
They got it back. Yep.
They gutted it like a mother bleeper.
Tiny kittens love dark discussions.
That's right. At that time, though, it was a 10-year-old cat, probably.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Right. Yeah. Right. I mean, I think that was a part of it, right? Was this 12 years? Because they were, or 11 years in, because they were doing a bottle a year. I was getting that sense.
Yeah,
they were opening
like
up a bottle
yeah.
of the peanut wine that he bought. For that first stay together at the weekend. And then he opened one up for the celebration that night, and it was kind of. And they were there every time they did a flashback. You know, they were drinking a bottle of it. So I was wondering if that was like. I was wondering if that was the final bottle out of
the
case.
Birthdays, right? It was the birthdays.
Right.
Well, the birthdays was significant too, because you notice that is a theme that keeps repeating throughout this. And I think the reason the birthdays were significant is because it was showing the passage of time, again, connected to the idea that she is getting older, her life is moving forward, she is growing, and he is not. He's still the same dude that he was. And I think that's why they chose the
that's
birthdays.
That's why he's the monster. That's why the monster came to him. He's the monster, not her. I'm saying
well,
it like...
I mean, yes, well, you know, I think it was all very interesting. But anyway, I don't think there's too much more I want to talk about. I don't know about you guys. I think
well, let me ask you this. Chris, I want to ask you this because about the wine, right? You know, so the wine meant a lot. But then, you know, he threw out that wisecrack about... the stuffy shirts at the reunion and all that. And mm-hmm. why don't you do that thing with the how you smell the wine and all that? And she says, no, I don't want to do it now. I just don't want to, whatever. Did he not like her enjoying wine because it made her, in his eyes, better than her? Or was he just being a dink?
He thinks liking wine falls on a list of things snobs do.
Yes.
Right. So he's a dink. He was being
right. And I do think, I mean, there is some implication there, too, and it's very subtle, but there is an implication there that he's maybe a little bit jealous of this man from her past, you know, and we
oh,
and
no,
he
no,
was.
No, no.
Yeah, because he says, oh, isn't that guy the one that you went to see? Isn't he the one that got you into all this wine stuff or whatever? And that was almost. Less of a, oh my God, it's what snotty people do, which I do think that is definitely part of that, yes. But it was more like, oh, well, clearly you think that he's still better than me.
So yeah. It was more of a, maybe it was more of a jealousy thing of her past than actually snobbiness or wine.
Oh, I definitely think it was a jealousy issue.
Right, and she shot him down big, too. So was he there? And he goes, yes, he was there with his wife, and they had to leave early to get home for their kids. And then he had nothing more to say because he was like, oh, okay, sorry.
Oh.
Yeah. What a dumbass. Stupid bastard. I would have, if she was an idiot, she should have dumped that guy's ass 7 years ago and moved on. Fuck him.
Well, and that's the problem is that, you know, you do get the sense she says something like, I fell for it. You wooed me. I fell for it. But, you know, the thing is, it's
that's
not about
job.
That. It's like, it is your job. Yes. However,
to sucker you into thinking we're better than we are.
When you really fall hard for someone, even if they keep screwing up, oh my God, like you don't, it's really difficult to walk away from that. It really is.
Wake up and stop wasting your time.
Well,
but,
it is.
You know what?
But,
you know what? It comes both ways too. Cause my mother said, you're wasting your time. And I was like, yeah, I guess you're right. So people waste their time. It's like, what the fuck? It doesn't, you know, you just move on. The hell.
It's almost as if people are flawed individuals.
Right.
Well, that's true. You know, I mean, listen, I had a person in my life that, oh, my God, it's been going on for 28 years on both sides. You would think that we would both just be like, dude, we both have to move on. Every time we sit down and go, we both have to move on. We go away for 5 years. 5 years, we're back together again. It's ridiculous.
Well, you know,
and it's just never going to end at this point. I'm like, whatever, dude, we'll still be doing this shit when we're 80. So
my mother gave my father the what's the word I'm looking for? She gave the ultimatum. So, and that's what this woman should have done. She said, I'm giving the ultimatum or I'm out of here. And then there would have been, then she would have had a deadline for herself.
Yes. Mind. Yep. Yeah. And that's why I think, you know, true love and romantic love, at least the way that they were kind of showing us that their relationship dynamic was before this, is a hard thing. It is difficult to walk away from that, whether you are male or female. And that's why I think sometimes, you know, doing the ultimatum is a tough thing, because she probably didn't want to lose him, because she probably knew that if she gave him the ultimatum, he'd be like, all right, no. She probably knew that. And that's why she probably never gave it to him, because she sat there and said, well, I really would rather have him in my life than walk away. And sometimes that's what happens. And that's how you end up putting up with all their ridiculous shit for as long as you do. Because you don't want to miss out, or you don't want to let that person go, because you do love them.
Eric said, maybe people are flawed.
People are flawed.
Maybe.
Just a maybe.
Sometimes, tragically so. Sometimes, tragically so. You know what I mean? Just tragically.
Indeed.
So.
Yeah, sometimes people are their worst enemies.
That's indeed. True.
And sometimes people are Hitler.
Well, one person was Hitler, and Eric's parents were Hitler's too.
What I mean, I think Eric means Stalin's, Hitler's, Lenin's, yeah. Mao's.
There are all sorts of different levels of being flawed. Yes. That's what I was going for there.
Yes, but Mike, right. Well, I mean, you're a joke, Eric.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you think about it. We do have a habit of using Hitler as our go-to.
Benchmark
well,
of shitty humanity.
He's not. Yes. Well, he's not Hitler. As if that's like the level you have to reach to be a shitty human being. You know.
I don't think anybody.
Like. I mean. Can't we just say? Well, you know. Yeah. O.J. Simpson killed his wife, but he's not Hitler. You know, as if somehow.
I don't know what to say to that, Mike. Well, everybody's.
I'm just saying there are other gradations of evil.
He may have murdered somebody, but at least he's not Hitler.
We all pretty much get a pass on that one. I mean,
oh my God,
that's about as low as the bar as you can get.
Oh, well, he did commit genocide.
Well, he tried. He didn't really succeed at it.
Oh my. All right.
Wow. All right. I think we need
the hate mail's coming. The hate mail's coming. And right, it's all to Mike. A, B, E, S, I, N.
Oh, fuck me.
All right. So, anything else that we missed? That anybody, like a scene or anything anybody wanted to bring up? Anything? Anyone?
I'm good.
I think I'm kind of good. Yeah, I think I'm good.
All right, fair enough. So
we've exhausted it.
All right, so yeah, we antlered and gutted this one pretty good. We did it all. All right, so obviously Stuart Gordon passed away. That was big news for folks who are up to date for 3/26/2020. Rest in peace, 72 years old, I think. Did a number of classic cult films, and he will be missed. Any other news or anything anybody want to bring up, things they've been watching? Big news, 2 hours and 4 minutes, Ozark season 3 will be released. Mm-hmm. Netflix. It's gonna be a great thing. yes, my life has meaning. Anything else anybody want to bring up? Eric,
I do like this that you just posted here, Phil. Was that the creators of Plague Inc. have donated $250,000 to the coronavirus battle.
Yes.
Yes. So that's true. They probably made a fortune within the past 10 days, to be honest.
All my students were playing it when on our last day of school. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and that's a game that's been out for 8 years.
Like 2013 or something?
Yeah, at least. Yeah.
I've had it on my iPad forever.
Yeah, same here. I actually removed it and then reinstalled it 10 days ago to stop playing it. So yeah, Eric, you were gonna say some stuff you wanted to mention. That
I caught one 2020 release called Hunter's Moon. It's got some recognizable names in it: Thomas Jane, Amanda Wiss, Jay Moore, Katrina Bowden. Oh wow! Apparently Henry Rollins was in it too. I didn't recognize him. Anyway, it's kind of a weird home invasion werewolf movie. It wasn't great, but I've seen worse. So it exists. But if you're putting together a list of 2020 movies to watch, don't put it at the top. Put it somewhere in the middle. Because it's not trash, but it's an indie movie, and it shows.
Now, Eric, is this a VOD rental?
Yeah.
All right. And what was that Creek one or Brook one that you mentioned from last week? That was pretty solid.
That was Camp Cold Brook.
Camp Cold Brook. Okay.
Camp Cold Brook had a much lower budget than Hunter's Moon.
Okay, and that's the one that you recommended. So I'm going to rent that one. I got to see that one. Camp Cold Brook.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Sounds good. Let's see. For me, I am rereading The Stand. I'm on page 300.
Because you hate yourself.
Yeah. I'm like drowning myself in all contagion things to get, be informed.
Yeah, because The Stand, which was written in 1984 or something like that, 1980?
Yes. The extended version came out in 1989, though.
Yeah, it's going to inform you about a contagion that breaks out in 2020.
Well, technically, the first 300 pages are fairly legit because it's a super flu. So similar
it's way worse than the coronavirus, though.
Yes. Yeah, it's similar to the one in the movie Contagion, where the moment you get it, you're dead within 24
hours. No, The Stand is way worse than that one, too. The Stand is the worst one ever.
Yeah, that's true, because it keeps on mutating. Yeah, that's true.
So it was actually developed as a biological weapon.
That's right, exactly. Yeah, and the reason it's so effective is that it mutates like every day. So if you get your antibodies and you stop it, it mutates and then you're screwed because you have to start all over. So I'm rereading that. So far, solid as I remember. Of course, the ending last couple of hundred pages, like most Stephen King.
Which version are you reading?
The extended. That's the only one I've ever read. And so I'm just rereading that one. You got to read the extended one because it has.
Some, oh, I have.
Yeah. It has some really good extra stuff that
mostly about the garbage can man.
Yeah. The guy that's with him, this Cody something kid. I forget what he's called. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I forget the guy's name, but yeah, but mostly the garbage can man and someone that he hangs out with. So rereading that, again, the joke, you know, he can't do endings. I guess they're doing The Stand remake as a 10 episodes show. It's for CBS All Access. Technically, it's a 2020 release, but who knows what they're going to do now after the coronavirus, because it may look cheesy if they try to release it now.
The miniseries they did of that back in the 90s wasn't horrible.
No, it was pretty
considering it was a network miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was pretty
cool. Which I'll agree with Eric, but that is a very large asterisk to throw on
well, yeah, but
from 1990.
A story with that scope, though, you can't really do as a movie.
No,
not a one-parter. You know, you could do multi-parts, but that really wasn't something they were doing in the 90s yet.
Right. And now they're doing miniseries out of 10 episodes instead of just two episodes like that.
Do you know who's doing that, Phil?
Yes. What the hell's the guy's name? I forget the act. I mean, the
company that's producing it.
Oh, it's CBS All Access.
CBS All, oh, those fuckers. All right.
Yeah. So, and I have that.
More money for you.
I spent the $60 on that for a year subscription as a Christmas gift for my wife. So.
But you won't subscribe to Shudder.
For free for 30 days.
Well, no, I have to resubscribe. They screwed me over. I think I explained this earlier, but the whole thing, I couldn't log in anymore. And then they said, oh, yeah, there's a screw up. And then what it is my thinking is they just want us to buy it straight through their website so they don't have to pay the extra, you know, off a little off to iTunes or Amazon or whoever else.
So then do that.
Yeah, I plan to. It's just going to be a pain in the ass because then I got to contact them again through an email and demand them to drop a buck and go, because I want to go back to the $4.99 rather than the $5.99 that it is now. So I'll re-up that sooner or later. But yeah, Stephen King did say that he and his son, Owen King, they're rewriting the ending to the miniseries, so it won't be like the book.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So that'd be interesting. And that's pretty much all I got going there. And I rewatched some episodes of The Office, too.
Well, that's good. At least you're balancing it out.
Yeah, exactly. I have to get some levity back. What about you, Mike? Any movies or anything you wanted to mention? And are you, Chrissy?
I did watch the movie Chrissy had mentioned last week called The Room, which I recommend.
Yeah. And this is not The Room. This is not the one that was starring Brie Larson. This is a different
movie. This is one that's on Netflix, not on Netflix, on Shudder. It was released, I think, last year, but it's one of those, again, film festival things, which I think a 2020 release for what we would consider.
Is it a foreign film or is it an American film?
It's got two foreign leads, but it's set in New York, so you go figure.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah, like
it's in English. Yeah. It's in English, so that's all that matters.
Film, though. Yeah, sure.
Like that. I rewatched because Pam hadn't seen it. Was Satanic Panic. You know, which was a blast.
Yes, blast.
Very, very fun film. I finished doing my Westworld rewatch.
Did she like it? Did she like Satanic Panic?
Oh, yeah. She laughed a lot.
Okay. And you rewatched season two of Westworld?
I rewatched of Westworld. And again, I recommend if you are interested in Westworld that you watch it and then tune into Bullets, Brothels, and Bots, found on wherever your local podcasts are sold, to hear the discussion about the latest episodes. Yeah, other than that, I just started playing Witcher 3 because I've got time on my hands. I'm playing a game for the first time, and I can't tell you how long. That's not on my phone, so.
Is that an older game?
Old enough. Yeah. It's a couple of years.
Is it on, like Xbox or
yeah. I got, like, the Game of the Year edition, which means it had all the downloadable content for $20. Yeah, so, I mean, that's the one advantage of being out of date on your video games is you don't buy them for your $70-$80 that they're coming out with now, you know, to get all the extra content. You can get all the extra content for cheap later.
Yeah, I know. It's great. All right. Very good. What about you, Chrissy? Anything of interest?
No, not really. I've been, work has been a little bit crazy, so I've just been trying to play catch up with all the extra time I've had at home, and there have been some other things I've been trying to get done. So I did enjoy, like I said, The Room. I kind of went through Shudder and added a bunch of stuff that looked interesting to my list. And I went through Netflix and added some stuff to my list. And I am definitely hoping to get to watch those things.
Oh, watch The Tiger King.
The Tiger King? Okay, I'll write that down.
Is that Shudder?
No, that's Netflix.
No, that's Netflix. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Barrett Heisner, one of our listeners, he said that it's like, crazy.
They're fucking crazy people. Yeah. It's hilarious and disturbing.
It's Netflix, you said?
Yeah.
Right.
All right, I wrote it down. I will go and add it to my list.
Speaking of important information, Eric, Dak Prescott may sign the largest contract in NFL's history.
I believe it happens.
By tomorrow, which is, yeah, exactly. It's kind of interesting. Yeah, very interesting, actually. All right. Eric, you actually do another podcast with your buddy Dan.
I do. It's a general interest podcast called the Askansity Podcast. That's spelled Askansity. We hit a little bump in the road because of this whole situation. But we're going to try recording this weekend with him being remote for the first time because we haven't done that before. So we'll see how that works.
Very good. And Mike, even though you mentioned it a little bit in passing, is another podcast me, you, and Eric have been doing?
Yeah, it's Bullets, Brothels, and Bots, a Westworld podcast, which you can listen to. What is it about? Because the show airs on Sunday nights. You can usually download it Tuesday or Wednesday.
Exactly. Yep.
The podcast episode. Yeah. So because we record it on Monday night, and then within the next 48 hours, you can download it off of
Sorry, go ahead.
Google Plus or Apple or, you know, Apple podcast app or whatever, wherever your usual podcasts are sold.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And it's also can be found on the Doc Discussion podcast feed as well. What else? For folks who are interested, Ozark season 3, me and Eric did a episode on the first two seasons of Ozark. And that's episode of 429 of Dark Discussions podcast. So folks who want to hear our take on the first two seasons and to get ready for season 3 and whatnot, or just as a recap, listen to episode 429 of Dark Discussions podcast, the Ozark episode. Chrissy, you also do some stuff as well.
I do. I have the first issue of 34 Orchard, which is a literary magazine featuring dark fiction, has a release date of April 25th. However, I will say, in light of the circumstances, I am probably going to release it a little bit earlier. I still have some letters to send out because there are still some emails and short stories in my box that I might be holding. I'm pretty sure I'm actually holding them for a future issue. So those people haven't been notified yet, and I want to try to do that before I, you know, go announcing my table of contents. If you want to check out, I will be posting news there this weekend about everything status. You can check that out at 34orchard.com. And you can find out more about me and my work at ChristyPetersonSchoonover.com. My blog has not been updated in a couple of months, but it is going to be shortly because I've had a lot of placements, a lot of story sales in recent weeks. So I definitely want to get that news out there and hopefully start writing on my blog again. It's just been a while. You know, the problem is when you write short fiction, you don't want to spend time writing your blog. You know,
yep, makes a fair point. Two things, Chrissy, about that. One, if people can't find her blog, they can just go to darkdiscussions.com, and on the right there's an icon that links directly to her blog. And 34 Orchard, that is 34, the numbers, not the spelling of 34.
Correct. Okay. It is 34orchard.com. Yep.
Excellent. Very good. All right, so let's give our final thoughts on this film here, and then we can wrap it up. So let's start with you, Mike.
I enjoyed the film. I did not like it, as I said, as much as I liked The Battery, which I loved. It's a little cliched, but I think I enjoyed the characters enough. I think it was an interesting enough watch. Not a film I think I'll ever have an interest in watching again or owning on video. But if you did like The Battery, and if a slow burn horror film is something that you might be interested in, then I would definitely recommend you check it out.
All right, very good. For me, everything Mike said, except it's not a horror film. Chrissy?
I enjoyed this film. I would agree with what Mike said. I think it really is about relationships. And it is an interesting little film. And I'm not sure, Mike, that I do agree that it could have been shorter. I think it was just the right length. I was actually surprised that it ended as quickly as it did. And that was one thing I forgot to mention when we were talking. But yeah, I would definitely say check it out if you like slow burns, if you like something a little different, if you like indie. Even though I do consider it a horror film, it is not your typical horror film. It really isn't. It really is sort of a weird drama, horror, magic realist blend.
So just be
aware of what you're getting into. The creature, however, is fun, and the character of Wade is just so much fun that it's almost worth to just watch it for his two scenes. He was really the highlight of this movie for me. So that's it.
All right, very good. Eric.
I generally liked this movie. I thought it was well made enough to compensate for some of its weaknesses. But like, it's not like a must see. It's a see it if you think you might be interested. I would just say be aware going into it that it's not a really intense monster movie like they want you to think. It's more of a drama. But yeah, check it out if that sounds appealing.
All right. So once again, After Midnight, 2020 film, or technically, because we don't count the festivals, directed by Christian Stella and Jeremy Gardner, written by Jeremy Gardner, starring Jeremy Gardner and Bree Grant, along with a number of other folks, including one of the producers, Justin Benson, probably better known as one of the co-directors of films such as Endless Spring and Resolution. And he has a new film coming out, him and his co-director, later this year. And I think that's pretty much it. Available VOD everywhere if you're so interested. As Eric and Chrissy both said, it's definitely going to appeal only to certain folks, so be careful. If what we discuss seems interesting to you, rent it. Otherwise, skip it. And with all that stated, Eric, why don't you lead us out?
All right. Thanks for tuning in and listening to us talk about After Midnight. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.
They can take our bones and bury them deep under the river, but we'll still be together, and we cannot be defeated. They can take our trombones and pack them down there with us, but no matter how long it takes us, we will not be defeated. When we dance together under